Welcome to another inspirational My Church podcast. We hope that this message will bless and encourage you. To find out more about My Church, including locations and service times, please visit livelove.ca.
What I wanted to do today is just jump right into the Bible, and we're actually going to look and get a snapshot of the first community, the birth of the church, and this is the first account that we have of the church being born. And so we're going to jump into Acts 2, and this is what it says. It says, all the believers devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship and to the sharing of meals, including the Lord's Supper and to prayer. It says, a deep sense of awe came over all of them, and the apostles performed many miraculous signs and wonders. And all of the believers met together in one place and shared everything that they had. They sold their property and their possessions, shared the money with those in need, and they worshiped together in the temple each day, met in homes for the Lord's Supper, and shared their meals with great joy and generosity, all the while praising God and enjoying the goodwill of all the people. And each day, the Lord added to their fellowship, added to their community, those who were being saved. God, we thank you for today. We're expectant to learn something new, to learn something fresh from you, God. And so we just thank you for what you're going to do. In Jesus' name, everybody said?
Amen.
Amen. So, community. There is lots of different types of communities to get involved into. And I know even for myself, I've had lots of different communities. I've been involved in this one, sports communities, lots of different things. But as incredible as community is, I think that there's also kind of like a weird side to communities. Like, I don't know if you've experienced this, even when it comes to sports communities. We did a rental once with a dance show. And Dance Moms actually made me rethink my whole belief system. I was like, God, I don't know after seeing these women if I should turn the other cheek. Like, it's like, there's weird communities out there. Maybe you've experienced the arts community. I remember going and joining my high school band. And I went to two practices and realized I wanted to protect my time and my social position. I was like, man, these are weird people. They are. If you play the flute, you're welcome to church, but it's a weird group of people. Or like, or political. Like, have you ever seen like the political community? This is my thing. Like, you can have your political. I have lots of thoughts on politics. That's great. But don't say your political ideology when you're answering a question. I was in university, and literally, like, the prof was asking like the simplest question, and this girl raised her as a Marxist feminist. It's like, oh, like, no, just. Please, just stop. Like, he was just asking, has anybody seen my keys? Like, that's not, you don't have to give that whole backdrop. But the worst community is the online community. Anybody, I don't know what it is, but it takes normal, well-mannered people and turns them into monsters. Like, you can be talking to, like, your grandmother even, and she's like, just this beautiful person, honey, it's going to be okay. On Facebook, she's like, destruction on the city. Like, sharing these crazy viral videos. It's like the online community and like the rating system. Like, we've even received some reviews as a church. Most of them have been pretty good, but the idea of rating a church to me is a very scary idea. Like, it's a foreign idea. This is basically a 98% volunteer effort. It would liken to me, like, reviewing a church, basically like a food critic going into a soup kitchen and being like, yeah, Edna's pancakes, super lumpy, never coming here again. It's communities are weird. And the church community is no different. We have weird things. Like, if you've ever heard, and maybe you're new to church, you may have heard people talk about quiet time. I remember the first time I heard that, I was like, either that person has anger management issues or their parents are still disciplining them at 40 years old. I don't know which one it is. I don't know why you need quiet time, but you've got it. And all across any type of communities stand out. They're particular. They're peculiar. And what we see in this community that Luke talks about is this community that stood out, that stood different from amongst the rest. And it was so different, it was so dynamic that people couldn't help but be drawn to it. Right. There was this sense of generosity, this sense of joy, there was this momentum, there was this sense of awe and miracles that were happening in the context of this community, and people couldn't look away. And I think if there's anything that we can agree on, it's that we all need some community. Yeah. We all need each other. It's not enough that I just have my family, like my vibe, my tribe, but I actually need to be part of a greater community. Yeah. And this is the thing, studies would show this as well. And in fact, there was a Canadian study that was done in 2016 by the Community Foundations of Canada. And this is what they found in their study. These are some of the benefits of community. Firstly, they said, Community positively affects our sense of belonging to our local community and to Canada. I think we'd all agree with that. It also helps young people find jobs, do better in school, it improves mental health. That's a good thing. Every parent knows, like, you want your kid to have decent mental health. You want them to be in school and thriving. It says that it helps support older people to be healthy and redefine their role in society. And in fact, community even leads to people living longer lives. So when we look at this and what the studies say, we can all agree that we all need community. But this is the interesting thing, is if you look at this study, there was also some conflicting reports in this study. And one of them that's up on the screen is that actually when they surveyed Canadians, they found that 50% of Canadians don't feel like they need or need to be a part of community events or activities. So this is the interesting thing, is if we split this room in half, and this room represented Canada, we all agree that we need community. We all agree on the benefits of community, but if you split this room in half, one half of the room would say, yeah, I agree that I need it, but actually I don't want it. That's an interesting thought. Not only that, but actually one in four people don't even feel that knowing your neighbor is important to everyday life.
Wow.
So on one hand, in Canada, we all know implicitly that there's benefits to being part of a community, but that actually doesn't necessarily mean that we want community. And yet as a church, we almost take for granted that, well, if everybody comes in, community is our silver bullet. That's the thing that everybody wants. But it might not be as clear-cut as we think. And this is the thing, this isn't actually just a secular idea, thank you very much. It's not just an idea out there, but actually when you even look at religion, so Angus Reid did this other study last year in 2017, and it was interesting, they broke the survey into four categories, so they're up on the screen. So there was non-believers, people who just don't believe in God, people who are spiritually uncertain, so that would be maybe agnostics, people who haven't really decided either way, privately faithful, and religiously committed. Religiously committed people are basically people who go to a religious ceremony once a month or more, so the bar is high. And so, just playing. So if you look at this, 21% of people, 21% of Canadians, according to this survey, would say that they're religiously committed. They go to some sort of religious ceremony once a month. But what I find interesting is the relationship between the religiously committed people and the privately faithful people. So what they did is they asked these two groups a whole bunch of questions on what their convictions were. So they said, hey, do you believe in heaven? Do you believe in hell? Do you believe God is active in the world? Do you believe that there's life after death? And with the exception of hell, statistically, privately faithful people and religiously committed people have the same convictions.
Right.
So what does that tell us? That if these people have the same religious convictions, if they believe the same things, the only thing that they don't want is the community.
Wow.
But everybody needs to join a connect group. Everybody needs community, but I'm not sure they want it.
Yeah.
Right.
So where does that leave us? What do we do? And here's my thing. I want to make my intentions very clear right from the onset. Am I preaching this sermon to get you to come to church more? Well, when the average family in my church comes once every 3 weeks, unequivocally, yes. Yes, I am. I'm going to make it very clear. But this is my thing, is my starting point is going to be different. And I want to approach this from a more honest starting point. I'm not here to diminish the many things that you have going on in your life. I'm not here to shame anybody or to look at those stats or figures or anything like that and pressure people, because honestly, a motivation like that, you'll only be as motivated as the guilt is strong. And so that's not my starting point today, but my starting point is to say, why community? And to build a case that community isn't just something you should need, but it's actually something that you should want and maybe even start to move and shift your life to make sure that you have a community.
Right.
The benefits are clear, but how do we convince people to make a case for consistent community? And so that's what I'm going to do today. And I want to do it in two ways. I want to break down maybe some of the barriers that we have when it comes to community, and specifically when it comes to church, because I believe that this is the greatest community that can uniquely meet all of your needs to live your best life.
Wow.
That's my starting point. That's my big idea, is that the church is the community that can uniquely meet all of the needs for you to live your best life. And so what I'm going to do is break down some barriers today that people might have to church community, but then I also want to, on the flip side, show some of the strengths of what community offers. Is that cool?
Yeah.
All right, so this is the first one. If you're taking notes, is I think a barrier to community often is that people see church as an institution rather than seeing the individuals. Wow. Yeah. You know, another way of maybe saying this is that people don't like to buy into organized religion. And that's kind of an interesting thought, even in and of itself. Like, I've never had a conversation with somebody where I'm like, hey, man, like, do you want to come to my church? They're like, no. Like, why? It's organized. Like, that's, I've never seen that happen. But this is the thing. When we think of organized religion, what do we think of? We think of bureaucracy. We think of death by a thousand committee meetings. We think of maybe an authoritarian kind of regime. We think of all of these things and processes, and we think of so many things that are so far from what the church actually is.
Yeah.
But this is what I want to encourage you with, is maybe you see it like that, but church isn't an organization, it's an organism.
Yeah.
It's something that's living, and I'm not here to diminish again, like, that there hasn't been big organized institutions that have done bad things. I'm not pretending like that doesn't exist. But that doesn't mean that you can't give the individuals here a chance.
Yeah.
Right.
And this is, you know this even in your own life. Imagine you're having a family reunion. And the family reunion is bigger than your house. You can't fit in everybody in the house. Well, what would you do? You'd maybe organize a space that's bigger. You might coordinate with people to bring food. We implicitly, within the idea of community, there has to be some sort of organization, or else it's just going to fall apart. So obviously, that's a logical argument for it. But even in the Bible, we see that community got organized as the New Testament rolled on. So literally at the beginning, when we see Luke's account of the early church, think about what it says. It says in verse 42 that they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching. And yet later on in Paul's later letters to the church, we see that not only do they give themselves to the apostles, but Paul starts to talk about, well, actually, no, there's going to be prophets who are going to help serve, and preachers, and leaders, and pastors, and deacons, and elders. So all of a sudden, the church evolved from people just being devoted to 12 or 11 apostles to all of a sudden this leadership structure. Yeah. Think about even how people gave their resources. Luke talks about at the beginning of the church, everybody just selling their possessions, throwing it in. Obviously, to even get something started, you have to give just incredibly generously and sacrificially.
Right.
And the church never graduated from being generous. But even in 1 Corinthians 16, Paul gives a different method for giving. He says, no, don't sell your property. Just give weekly as you have income coming in.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it evolved and developed. Not only that, think about in Acts when they were actually choosing leadership. This is how they chose their leaders in the early church. They're like, all right, let's get some sticks. Whoever picks the shortest one is going to be the next leader. Like, that's a crazy way to run an organization. And then later on, though, Acts and Titus, when he's writing to Titus, actually says, well, no, here's the criteria to appoint leaders and elders and deacons in the church. So literally, somebody who is there at the very beginning, at this beautiful moment when the church was birthed, I wonder what that would have been like for them to walk into a church in Ephesus and go, man, like, well, no, I want to talk straight to the disciple. No, I want to talk to Peter. I used to talk to Peter, now I need to talk to Peter. Man, I can't believe it. We're not selling property anymore. You're asking me to do this thing once a week. But this is the thing. As an organization grows, as a community grows, it needs organization to actually help it flourish. And so I don't think that organized religion, it has to be a dirty word. I don't think it has to be a scary term. And ultimately, what I would do, if I was you and maybe you've been hurt by it, is look at the individuals. Look at the quality of people. Because I think when the heart is there, when the quality of people is there, that's when God can do something great. So maybe that's been your thing. Maybe I know for other people, the barrier to community is that they see church as an event and not an everyday. So church isn't this community. It's actually a slice of time. It's not something that we share together. It's just something that happens on a Sunday. It's something that happens from a 10 to 12. You know, I've even had people who I run into and like, hey, I saw you at church like a while back. Where do you go now? What are you up to? Oh, I go to my church. Like, oh man, like I haven't seen you in a while. How long has it been? Oh, like a year. I'm like, well, that's amazing that you attend, but just attendance doesn't mean that you're part of it.
Yeah.
And see, this ultimately comes down to how we define community.
Right.
What is it really about? And this is where I think a lot of people see it as an event, but ultimately we're called to be a community in a family.
Yeah,
listen to what it says in 1 Timothy when Paul is defining the church. He says, I want you to know people who are members of God's family, or sorry, how people have, who are members of God's family must live. God's family is the church of the living God. See, so when Paul is talking about church, he's saying, no, this isn't just an event that you attend. This is actually a family that you're a part of.
Wow.
You don't attend family. You don't go to family. You don't just not show up to family. If you did, well, I don't know about you, but in my family, like, that would be a smack across the head. Like, that's just what it is. And I don't mean that, and by the way, I don't mean that in a condescending way at all, but what I'm trying to do is maybe if you've seen church's event, to maybe reframe it to say there's actually more depth to what this is.
Yep.
There's actually something greater to what this is.
So good, man.
And this is the thing, is I don't think that this is nuance. Like when Paul is talking about the church's family, that's not analogy, that's not semantics or nuance. Even think about how Jesus treated people. Literally on the cross, he's looking down at his mother and a disciple named John, and he says, John, this is now your mother. Mom, this is now your son. That was the approach that Jesus had to family. Think about Matthew 12 even. So literally, Jesus is preaching, and there's all these people around, and Jesus' physical, like, natural family is outside. One of the disciples comes in and says, Jesus, your brother and sister and your mom, they're here. They want to talk to you. Listen to Jesus' response. It's up on the screens. He says, but who's my mother? Who's my brothers? Whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and my sister and my mother. So this is a really provocative thought that Jesus, in his mind, his natural his family of faith, the people around him who had the same faith as him, were actually higher than his physical family. Now, I can even imagine in this room right now hearing that, there's a protectionism that's kicking in. What are you saying, that my kids aren't as important? No, I'm not saying that at all. If that's the case, then we'd have to assume that Jesus is trying to deconstruct the family unit. I don't think Jesus in this moment is trying to deconstruct the family unit. He's trying to add to it. He's trying to say that there's actually a bigger family, a larger family. And this is the thing, when you have more brothers, when you have more sisters, when there's more spiritual aunts and uncles, then you're actually more supported. Your children will be more blessed. You'll have more people in your corner. And yet a lot of the time, though, we like to separate it and say, no, this is just an event. But what if we started to treat church as a family? What if we started to realize that, actually, no, you are my brother. You are my sister.
Wow, crazy, man.
How might we start to treat each other?
Yep.
How might we start to treat the community? How might we start to look at a Sunday a bit different? How might we look at a connect group a bit differently?
Right.
I think for some people, too, and I think as well, people just think, man, it's not a priority. There's lots of things happening in my life, and that's one of my barriers to community is just things happen. Life happens. It gets busy. Listen to what Jesus said in Luke 4. So Jesus is going back to his boyhood town, and it says that he came to the village of Nazareth, his boyhood home, and he went as usual, or as other translations, most of them would put it, as was his custom, to the synagogue on the Sabbath and stood to read the scriptures. That's an interesting thought, that when it came to church, when it came to meeting, that was actually part of Jesus' custom since the time he was a boy. Now, this is the crazy thing, is I think so often, though, we come to church with a consumerist mentality. Man, how is this going to feed me? How is this going to serve me?
Right.
And yet what Jesus showed is, no, he just made it a priority.
Yeah.
Now, if there was anybody who could write a Google review, anybody who could write a review, it would have been Jesus, the Son of God, watching, like, these hack rabbis try to get through the word. Like, I can imagine Jesus, like, tweeting, like, you know, like, mediocre sermon at best, like, at best, like, at creator of the heavens. Like, that's, like, I could see, he's probably the only person who would have the right. And just, by the way, if you feel like you're not being fed, that's the definition of a baby. Like, if you need to cry about not being fed, that's the definition of a child. So, that's for your aunt. That's for somebody else. Just put that in your pocket. But just put it in your pockets for somebody else, for the other church. But frequency forms your priorities. Frequency forms your priorities.
Wow, so good.
And Jesus, the creator of the heavens and the earth, with nothing left to learn, submitted himself and said, this is something that's going to be a custom in my life. Parents, if I can encourage you, I'm so thankful that my parents actually made me go to church.
Yeah.
There was days they, like, I'd be like, I have a cold. Like, no, you're going to church. Now, don't get my kids sick. If you're sick, don't bring your kids. But this is the thing. It's conflicting messages right now. We'll pray for healing. But I'm so glad that my parents did that. And I think, you know what? Parents, to build that discipline is not a bad thing. And this is the thing. You are not slave to your child's emotions, to your child's feelings. Have the discipline to say, this is something that's going to be a custom. And because it was a custom that was built into my life, it's something that's always been dear to my heart. So I just want to encourage you if you're a parent there. Now you might be thinking, so what are you saying? So I have to come to church? Does it make me, am I not a Christian if I don't come to church? No, not at all. I'm not questioning your salvation if you don't come to church, if you don't come with any regularity or anything like that. But I heard this analogy. A fish is still a fish if it's outside of the water. It's just not going to live that long. You are still a human. You are still a human if you don't eat. I'm just recommending that it's a good idea. Like that's more so what I'm trying to say today is that I haven't seen a Christian who's living a generous, spacious, wide open, faith-filled life without a community of faith. Because we were built and created and formed and fashioned for interdependence. And so I want to encourage you. I'm not here to make a case about higher attendance. How about higher engagement? Just start to engage with the community. So those are some of the objections. But what does church uniquely offer? What does it actually do for us? How does it actually build it? I made an argument earlier saying that church is the one thing that uniquely gives us everything to live our best life. Right. So what I'm going to try to do is synthesize this into like 3 points. There's a whole lot more to church than that. But firstly, I think that church engages your faith. Yeah. It centers you in on what's most important. I don't know about you, but one of the traits of humanity is that we're incredibly forgetful. Like cue the Old Testament, like the Israelites, it was like, all their whole history was them seeing God and forgetting God, seeing God and forgetting God. And I think even in our lives, you know this even in your family, it's so easy to lose priorities. It's so easy with the work deadlines and all of these different things happening to start to not prioritize. And I think when we meet together, it engages our faith together.
Right.
And I even think about, like, there's been so many times in my life that I've needed the community of faith. I love what Pastor Julie says, and it was something that she said, and I never heard before, but in a moment, in a church service like this, you can borrow somebody else's faith. Yeah. You know, I've come in many Sundays not really having that faith on my own, feeling beat down from the week, and it's been incredible to see somebody else believe in God, to see somebody else in the midst of prayer saying, man, God is still faithful. There are these praise reports. He still is moving. And I just think that we need that week in and week out to regenerate and energize our faith. Even think about a coal. When there's a coal out on its own, it doesn't burn. You put it in a fire and it lights again. It reignites. That's what we do when we meet together. It centers us and reignites our faith. And even when you think about it too, studies have even shown that it's actually good to meet together. Even when it comes to singing together, there was one study that was done in Hartford University, and it actually showed that when children sang together, it actually improved their behavior at home and school. So right there, every parent is like, you need to come to church every week. I need that. I need my kid here as much as possible. But there's this one study. Now, I actually haven't seen any like peer-reviewed stuff under it, so you can take it with a grain of salt. But it's really interesting is that when people sing together, I was reading that their heartbeats actually sync up. And that's super interesting is that there's something about not just us singing, not just us coming together and praying. I don't think the Bible just says sing spiritual songs together for no reason, but God is actually doing something in our hearts. And when your heart is off, when you're not feeling like you've got the faith, when you come in a faith community, all of a sudden it starts to sync up your heart with what God's doing and reminds you of how good He is, how faithful He is, how able He is. And I don't think that there's something, you can't do that outside of the context of a community. I think it enriches your life as well. This community will grow you more than any community can. Yeah. Pastor Caleb was talking about it even in the giving message, but I think this is the greatest place to teach you how to be selfless. Yeah. I think society, the undertone of society is what you can take from life, what you get in life. This is one of the few places that's actually just going to teach you how you give in life. And that's a crazy thought. And there's this word actually in Acts 2, the fellowship of the believers. That the original Greek word is koinonia. And when you hear fellowship, maybe you think of like a musty church basement drinking tepid coffee. That's not at all what fellowship is. That's maybe an aspect of it, minus the bad coffee. But that's an aspect of it, but not all of it. Fellowship is actually sharing and participation. It actually isn't just about you having a conversation and having relationship, but fellowship was actually a participation in a sharing of life together.
Yeah.
See, that's what we're able to do in the church community, is not just come and receive, but actually we come to this community to be able to give. And there's nowhere else, there's no other communities that I know that are just centered around us coming together to selflessly give to one another. And so this is the thing, and I know there's lots of people who would say, well, you know, like, you can do that on your own, you know, or like, even when it comes to like connect groups, I think about that. Many people, when they came in, said, oh man, like, why don't you guys do Bible studies? Like, I need to grow. Like, why don't you do Bible studies? And yet when I look at it, it's like, well, people are the opportunity to grow. You can do a study on, you know, hermeneutics and all these crazy things, or you can actually just get that person who rubs you the wrong way and learn to forgive them. You know, you can talk about, you know, all these things in outreach and generosity, or you can just pick somebody up. Yeah. Straight up. You can have all of these moments of deep intercession. There's nothing wrong with any of that stuff, by the way. Or we can actually just be with somebody who's mourning.
Yeah.
We can share those moments with them. That's fellowship. Yeah. That's what makes our community distinct. That's what makes our community different. And that will grow you more than any book or any novel or any self-help thing. Just being committed to the people. But somehow the church has mixed this up and gone, well, in order for me to be able to serve people, I need to read things about serving people. Why don't we just start to come together and say, I'm going to commit to loving you. I'm going to commit to loving you when I don't like you. I'm going to commit to loving you when I don't agree with you. I'm going to commit to loving you when you rub me the wrong way. And this is the thing, in a room this size, there's some of us who don't like each other. That's the truth. But in the middle of that, that's actually your greatest opportunity to grow.
Wow.
And we're all brought together in this space and place. And God says, have fellowship. Participate together. Grow together. And finally, I think that it enlarges our relationships. Where else? What other context? What other community brings together such a weird group of people? This, I don't mean that in a bad way. I actually mean our unity and our diversity is our strength.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unity isn't uniformity. And when you look around this room, there's different ages, there's different demographics, there's different socioeconomics, there's different colors, there's different like belief systems, or not, well, there might be different belief systems as well. There's different cultures, and it all comes together under one banner. There's no other place like this that brings together such a different group of people. And I think that there's a depth and a richness of relationship when we start to realize, again, the collection of what church is, what this community brings together. Not only that, it's actually a network. It's a support network. There is people in politics here. There's people in healthcare. There's people in education. There's people in school. There's mentors to young people. There's encouragers to older people. There's aunts and uncles to families. There's this support network that is so incredible that extends past our physical families. And just like I talked about, Jesus wasn't there to dismantle the family unit, but to add to it. And I just think with a family this size, the support is incredible. The love is incredible.
Right.
But the unity and the diversity shows that anybody can come in here and find somebody. Yeah. Anybody can come in here and feel like they belong. Anybody can come in and be able to connect with something or someone in this room.
Wow.
So we look at this. We look at the church. It enlarges and really ignites our faith. It grows us more than any other community can grow us. I think that there's a richness and a depth of relationship. And when we look at all of these, when we break down all the barriers, it would almost feel like a no-brainer. Like, of course, this community, of course we would do this. And yet at the end of the day, that's still sometimes not enough. And yet sometimes, even with all of those things at our fingertips, it can still get lost in the shuffle. And there's lots of different reasons for that, but ultimately I think that one of the main reasons is because we've learned to find community in so many other places. Hey, I mean, when it comes to preaching, I can go online. I can look at like Stephen Furtick. I can watch Stephen Furtick and T.D. Jakes at the same time if I want to.
Yeah, come on.
And they're good. They're very good. You know, when it comes to growing, I can take an online course. I can take a course that's even been made by a church.
Yeah.
I can serve at just another church that has a program that I really like. I can do all of it. Man, I'm on the Oprah Book Club. I'm good. I'm growing. Like, you know, we think about prayer. I can pray on my own. I just put down some new paneling in the prayer closet. Like, I'm ready. I can have deep and meaningful relationships outside of this community. And the truth is, you can do all of those things.
Yeah.
You can be successful outside of this community.
Yeah.
You can. So you might be like, well, why? Why do I have to? Why do I have to buy into Sundays and Tuesdays and Wednesdays and whatever else you guys are doing? Why do I have to do that? I found all these pieces in all these different places. Because this is the thing. Is more than what a community can offer. That's not what brings us together. There's something much deeper that brings us together. And it's actually not just about doing some things that churches do, but it's actually the connection that happens when we're doing it together.
Yeah. Right.
And see, the cause of Jesus isn't just about your relationship between you and Jesus, but it's actually our interdependence in our relationship with each other.
Yeah.
And you can actually live out in isolation all of the precepts of this faith and not truly be on mission with what Jesus has called you to do. Man, even boil this down, though, into a family example. Imagine calling your mom. Mom, the supper's happening? All right, cool. Who's cooking? Oh, Colin. Ooh. All right. I mean, I don't know. Well, tell you what, do I have to do the dishes? Ooh, I have to do the dish. Okay. All right, tell you what, Mom. This is what I'm going to do. I'm actually going to just go to Farm Boy. I'm going to pick up some chicken. I'm going to bring it over to my friend's house. His mom doesn't make me do the dishes, so I'm just going to do that. But hey, I'll see you in a few weeks. See, but what happens when it's family? Yeah, I'm here to do the dishes. All right, his cooking's not the best, but that's all right. I can help out. Maybe I can even help out. And all of a sudden, community does become this distant thing. It becomes something that's so real and so tangible. Listen to what Jesus says, and this is what I want to close on. This is Jesus' last words to the church. This is Jesus' last words to his disciples on earth when he ascends into the heavens. He says this in John 17. I'm praying not only for these disciples, but also for all those who will ever believe in me through their message. That's us. He says, I pray that they will all be one just as you and I are one, that you are in me, Father, and I'm in you. May they be in us so the world will believe that you sent me. Now he's emphatic and he repeats this in a different way. I've given them the glory that you gave me so that they may be one as we are one. I in them, you are in me. May they experience such perfect unity that the world will know that you sent me and that you love them as much as you love me. See, this thing isn't just about services. It's not just about coming to this community. But Jesus actually said, no, like the world is going to understand how much I love them by how dynamic this community is, by how connected this community is. And this is the crazy thing is what happens when conservatives and liberals get together. What happens when people from French and English get together? What happens when different races get together? What happens when rich people and poor people get together? What happens when powerful and powerless people get together? What happens when innocent and guilty people get together and they all come together? The world has to look at that and go, there's no way that they can have a love for each other that's so deep, that's so generous, that, man, I don't know what that love is, but it must be out of this world. And if it's out of this world, it means that there must be a God who's behind it.
Yes.
See, our unity is our strength. And when we come together, and our love for each other is bigger than our argument or our politics or our race or our economics, something beautiful happens.
Yes.
And people go, there's nothing that should be able to bring these people together. They have no reason to be together. Except we're united, not just by a community, but the underlying thing that unites us is a cause, and it's a name, and it's Jesus. That's why we need you here. That's why you matter here. That's why we're not just a collected group of individuals, but we're a family. Listen to what One author wrote, Stanley Horton, he wrote, "The world tends to disrupt, divide, and build barriers. The Holy Spirit broke down barriers as the church prayed together, worked together, evangelized together, suffered together. Nature tends to disperse, scatter, and break down, but it takes a higher energy to unite and more wisdom and power to build up than to tear down." What if you started to see community different? Now, I hope that I'm building a case for you being a part of this community. But what might happen? How might the world change? And this is the thing. It doesn't take another program. It doesn't take all of these other things. It doesn't take better preaching. All those things are great. It just takes you. And it takes me. And it takes us just being committed to love each other. And that's what will show the world that God loves them. I love that Jesus' last thing was that we ought to stay together. Stay together. When good times come, we stay together. When culture disrupts, we stay together. When there's nothing left in the fridge, we stay together. When it's a good day, we stay together. When it's a bad day, we stay together. When there's nothing left, we stay together. When there's no hope, we stay together. When there's something, we stay together. Where there's no peace, we stay together. Where there's loss, we stay together. And in that moment, with so many things that could divide us, the world will look in and go, there's something different about that community. There's something that stands out about that community. That's a community that you're invited into today. I know you got lots of other things happening, but what if you just started to say, I'm going to selflessly love and open up my life and open up my world to a couple more people around me?
Thank you for joining us today. To find out more about My Church, including locations and service times, visit our website. And if you'd like to support the ministry of My Church financially, you can do so by following the giving link at livelove.ca. Thank you for partnering with us. We pray this message has blessed and encouraged you.